Sports Meets Beer Podcast.
Beer.
Brad Barmore, Ben Perry, coming at you live from our usual table at Kinsmoke Restaurant in Healdsburg.
Table 7, always on reservation.
Always on reservation. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We appreciate it. Make sure you check us out on all our social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Untapped. Email the show. We started getting emails. We're so excited about that.
Big shout out, Bear Republic. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for making, you know, Google not kick us off of our Gmail account.
Game recognized game, Bear Republic. Thank you. But
reach out to us. Let us know what you think about the show. If you got beers you want us to try, you got topics you want us to discuss, you got questions you want to ask us, whatever. Just want to say hello. Let us know. SportsMeetsBeer@gmail.com. That's meats like the protein, M-E-A-T-S, SportsMeetsBeer@gmail.com.
And you said that so well.
Hey, well, we've only said it about 4,000 times.
No, technically 79 times, because today is episode 79.
Right. Well, I mean, we've said it more than that even, because we usually open and close the show with kind of talking about it. And, you know, we've had more than 79 episodes, we think.
We have. That's a fact.
All right, well, let's just jump into it.
Let's do this. A lot, I tell you now, too much to talk about. A lot of great football happening.
No, there isn't. There's a lot of bad football happening right now. All around the league. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the Kansas City Chiefs or whoever. You know, if you're 5-0 or 4-1, or it's still bad football. It's just, and we're going to get into that in a few minutes. But I want to lead with what is my favorite sport. I'm so excited. It's my favorite sports story of the year.
Field hockey's making a comeback.
You know, as I'm a hoop head, we've discussed this before, and you know, the Warriors, they won their third title in 4 years this year and all of that. You know, good stuff. And, you know, is this the final year of the Warriors being together for who they are and all that? We're going to get into that over the course of the entire season. That all being said, you know, the Niners and Garoppolo and Shanahan the second year, and John Gruden's back, and the Giants made these, you know, big signings before the season. But then all of these things have happened here in the local Bay Area sports landscape. And this is my favorite sports story of the year.
Ooh.
So if you are not a huge hoops head, I will quickly brief everyone on what is going on. So the Minnesota Timberwolves were sort of the de facto everyone's favorite other team last year. Everyone has their favorite team, and then there was like there's always another team that people root for, right? And the Timberwolves last year were that team for a lot of people around the NBA because they had Karl Anthony Towns, who's an insanely skilled big man. Andrew Wiggins is one of the most God-gifted, you know, players in the league. You know, and they were able to trade for Jimmy Butler, who is one of the top 4 or 5 two-way guards in the league also. You know, they got a new coach last year. They hadn't made the playoffs in like 15 seasons, I think it was. And so they made the playoffs last year. They got in. It was very exciting. It's a team that everyone's super excited about.
Jimmy Butler came from the 76ers, right?
Bulls. Chicago Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
The head coach there and the general manager is Tom Thibodeau, who was the head coach with the Chicago Bulls, and is known for being like a notorious grinder on his players. Just works guys to the absolute bone, plays them too many minutes. You know, he plays every game like it's game 7 of the finals. And we've seen as the season's going on, the smart teams are the ones that are resting their guys and giving them a respite over the course of the year, you know, minimizing their minutes. And that's just not the way that he does it. So he makes his trade for Jimmy Butler last year, because he needs somebody that played in his system that understands the importance of what he's doing defensively and all that stuff. And he's got all these young guys and Wiggins and Towns and, he brings in like a grizzled veteran from his team. And Jimmy Butler is in the prime of his career. It's a huge deal for Minnesota. You know, they bring in Jamal Crawford and a couple guys, and they make the playoffs. They have a nice season. You could argue that they underachieve, but it's an exciting roster. Well, about a week ago, Jimmy Butler decides he wants to be traded, and he doesn't report to training camp for the T-Wolves.
Okay. Not an uncommon thing happening.
No, we've seen this in the NFL, right? We're seeing the NFL. You know, it's not quite the same.
It's happened in the NBA as well, but not quite the same severity as
and
NFL.
It's pretty turdy for it to show up like a week before training camp starts. But he wants out nonetheless, and his sort of, you know, I'm giving you the Reader's Digest version of this, but his feeling is that,
as I appreciate,
the culture in the locker room is not what I want. There are not enough guys here that are committed to winning. And he met with Tom Thibodeau, and Thibodeau tried to talk him into staying, and they've really sort of dragged their feet on trying to make a trade. And, you know, they haven't really like slashed and burned his public persona per se, but they haven't really done a lot to like you know, keep him around and make him happy. So there was a possible trade this past weekend. So today, the day we're recording this is the 10th. So it would have been the weekend of the 7th, the 5th, 6th, and 7th of October. There was a trade in place with the Heat. Something fell through. They got to the point where they were exchanging medical records on players, which is kind of the last step. And something fell through and it didn't take place. Well, Jimmy Butler gave a pretty arbitrary deadline for this coming Friday, the 12th. I need to be traded by this Friday, the 12th. And I was like, well, what are you going to do? Just not show up like you're already doing? Like, right. I don't understand what that's about.
What leverage do you have at that point?
And so they said, okay, well, we'll try and figure it out. Well, he showed up at practice today. He showed up. He had not practiced with them at all. He showed up at practice today. And immediately, just he didn't announce his presence to anybody. Not the coaching staff, not the general manager, nobody in the organization. He just checked himself in or got in there in sweats and warm-up clothes, subbed himself into a 5-on-5 scrimmage that was happening on the side of the last five dudes on the bench. So it's the first five guys off the starting five against the bottom five, basically.
Yeah.
He checks himself in on the bottom five team and runs the starters out of the gym, yelling the entire time at coaches and GMs to the effect of, and I quote, this is from an Adrian Wojnarowski tweet. I quote Adrian Wojnarowski. He says, Butler was vociferous and intense throughout the scrimmage session, targeting president of basketball operations and coach Tom Thibodeau, general manager Scott Layden, and teammates, including Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. As the GM watched on the sidelines during the scrimmage, sources have said that Butler yelled to Scott Layden, "You need me, Scott. You can't win without me." And then torched Carl Anthony Towns, who just got a supermax contract, by the way, torched him, ran the starters out of the gym. Scrimmage was over and he left the facility and drove away.
God damn, that's a move.
Just burned that place to the ground. He then, and I didn't get a chance to watch it, I've just been kind of following it on Twitter. He apparently did an interview with Rachel Nichols immediately following that, like that aired on the NBA show that they're doing that they did tonight, because they're showing some preseason basketball games on ESPN. And according to Adrian Wojnarowski, Butler left teammates and coaches largely speechless. He dominated the gym in every way. It sure seems that Jimmy Butler is back, even if he's not with the Wolves. A lot of Minnesota players left Timberwolves practice today energized by Butler's performance, mesmerized with him taking end-of-the-bench players and running the table on the regulars. At the end, he marched out like a mic drop. Butler delivered a true tour de force. Just unbelievable. Just,
you know, it's funny, too. As you're telling me this story, I'm kind of visualizing it in my head, right? Because Jimmy Butler's got some great facial expressions anyway.
Yeah. To your point, look at this picture. Yeah.
That's the only sport that could happen in, if you think about it. Because you're not doing that in football, right? Obviously, you're going to get padded up, even if you're just walking through. You're not going to have the same impact as you would in basketball. You're definitely not doing that in hockey, right?
Yeah.
You have to suit up, skate up, the whole deal. Your baseball, maybe.
Unless you have to be the pitcher. You have to be the pitcher to show up and start mowing dudes down in batting practice.
Right.
That's the only way
or
that works.
You walk in, you know, someone questions your swing, and you come in batting practice and just, you know, yak it out of the park time and time and time and time and time again. That's the only thing that's relatively close, and it's not that close.
Yeah.
Basketball, that's why I'm, you know, as you aforementioned, you're a hoop head, and I'm slowly falling in love with that sport. A, for the reason of how shitty football is right now with all the new rules.
Yeah.
I am truly looking forward to this season. B, it makes it easier because I am a bandwagon Warriors fan. It's great to be on the side of winning.
Yeah.
So it makes it easy, right? But again, that's the only kind of atmosphere in which basketball players can have that kind of immediate impact.
Yeah.
It's such a small force. You know, it's something that...
Well, and you show up to a football practice and all the personnel groupings are in their meetings running their drills. You're not...
Right.
You know, it's a small thing. So apparently, I'm just kind of reading through on Twitter some of the stuff that he said in his interview with Rachel Nichols shortly thereafter. And he said, quote, It's really rambling, and it actually takes some of the shine off Butler in some regard, but I feel like it's probably worth mentioning. I haven't played basketball in so long, and I'm so passionate, and I love the game, and I don't do it for any other reason except to compete and go up against the best to try to prove that I can hang. So all my emotion came out at one time. Was it the right way to do it? No, but I can't control that when I'm out there competing. That's my love of the game. That's raw me at my finest, me at my purest. That's what we're going to get inside the lines. Cat came at me. I went up in practice and he said, anybody can get this work. He came at me first. I said, do it to me. And that's all I said. So basically what he says there is, I love basketball. I cannot help myself. Is it good? No. But is it not good? Yes. That's basically what he's saying right there.
Yeah. That's the old had conversation right there.
Yeah.
Well,
that is phenomenal.
But if you are getting him. You know, that's the problem with any professional athlete. You're going to get them at their best and their worst. I mean, that's just how it goes. I mean, look at, I don't know, I'll use Antonio Brown as an example.
Well, I just, but you know, as we sort of,
I don't want to fade away from this conversation. I'm just, you know.
We're going to make a comparison to some football stuff that's going on, but it's amazing to me that, you know, the NBA.
Did I steal your thunder?
No, not at all. The NBA. You know, is so reliant on its stars, and Minnesota is looking at Karl-Anthony Towns, who is a double-double machine, you know, 20 and 10 every single night, doesn't play a lick of defense, and, you know, can be a little bit of a stat chaser, which is infuriating because he's such a skilled player. They gave him a supermax contract because of his skill level. And then you've got a guy like Jimmy Butler, who, you know, is kind of a sausage head, you know, listening to his little interview there. But the guy's a grinder and a great player. They've got between those two guys and Andrew Wiggins, you've got arguably three of the top 40 players in the league.
Time out one second. Is he that much of a meathead, though? If this was a stage LeBron, you know, I'm going to taking my talents to Miami, that's a different interview in itself. If this sounds like it is truly raw and truly, you know, he woke up that morning and didn't know, he didn't have this thing all pre-planned out, it wasn't premeditated, then that sounds like a pretty, like, it's a not non-rehearsed answer.
Well, see, I think that's just it, though. I think that this whole thing is pretty rehearsed. I think he called Rachel Nichols in the morning, or called the Jump in the morning, and said, hey, I want to do an interview. I'm going to do it at 5 o'clock local time. I'm going to be at the practice facility. And because how else do you get the timeline of that is so
I'm
so
willing
concise.
To bet he was on his way there driving, called his agent and said, I'm doing this. And he said, let's get you in front of.
Yeah, maybe.
It's either Rachel Nichols or these next three shows. Boom, 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 boom. He knows, the agent knows who's live. He knows who he has a contact with. I imagine it's more, you know, granted, I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's how the whole thing plays out. I think it's so cool. I think it's really fucking awesome, to be perfectly honest.
I just think it's so great. And so, you know, this type of thing, you know, whereas, like, you know, we'll start drawing the comparison to the NFL here, where, you know, this is a guy, he's got a, you know, what you could say that he's a meathead or not. You know, this feels clearly calculated to me, but it doesn't seem to really matter, because he showed up and he balled out and he made the organization look like a bunch of clowns, right? Like a bunch of clowns, showed up and did an interview. You could argue that that was a smart idea or not. His eyes look a little glassy in some of the pictures I'm looking at right now. But, you know, his personality showed through and his game showed through in both. And it feels exciting, and these guys are engaging in Twitter beefs, and it's all kind of playful or serious, but it's engaging, and it's, I can't look away, right? That side of it, I can't look away from that. Whereas, like, in the NFL, you know, the Le'Veon Bell thing, or Antonio Brown, you know, tweeting at somebody and, like, you know, griping at reporters, or Le'Veon Bell just not showing up for practice and just disappearing altogether, and then these guys throwing him under the bus. It just feels so petulant.
Also, like, I feel like I'll use, like, the perfect example is the little I did scroll through Twitter and stuff today is the Josh Norman Twitter beef with the dude from the Saints.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Michael Thomas.
I went one sentence into that story, and I went, I'm done with that. Because how many times has Norman done this? Right? It's his thing. He gets in guys' heads. He tries to cause us this stir up. But again, it's like you said, it's petulant. It's stupid. It's
well, and it's tough because in the NBA, there's 10 guys on the floor at any one time.
Right.
You're not, like, the matchup either happens or it doesn't. you know, James Harden's guarding Steph Curry or vice versa. That's it. There's no denying that.
Right.
You know, whereas like Josh Norman only lined up against Michael Thomas like four times that whole game. It wasn't a lot.
It's the Jalen Ramsey, Tyreek Hill. I will give Jalen Ramsey credit, though, for the press conference. That took some fucking stones.
I didn't hear. What did he say in the press conference? After the game?
No, beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
The presser before. About
yeah, I saw that.
He's all pro return specialist.
Yeah.
You know, just kept driving that home.
Yeah. And you know what?
To the thing is, there's a couple times Tyreek Hill got shut down, but he also got burned pretty bad.
Not against, I watched that whole game, not against Jalen Ramsey. Didn't he got by Jalen Ramsey, but guess what? Jalen Ramsey bit because it was a run up the middle. So Jalen Ramsey
throwing on the outside?
Bit hard. Jalen Ramsey bit hard towards the middle and then stayed with Tyreek Hill because he realized that maybe he was getting burned, but they fooled him basically. But it was, he read the play, but Tyreek Hill was running full bore. So he kind of hesitated and stutter-stepped, and Hill was by him. But the rest of the game, he didn't really get him hardly at all.
Yeah.
That was A.J. Bouye that Tyreek Hill got that big play against.
The big one. But I think the play I saw looked like he scorched him once. But one play doesn't mean the whole game.
Right. But they also didn't line up against each other all because they moved Tyreek Hill so many places. And that's the point that we're trying to make here is that, like, it's hard in the NFL to be able to have those kind of beefs and have that mean something.
Yes.
Whereas, like, in the NBA, this kind of stuff, like, I think my favorite Twitter follow right now and Instagram follow is Joel Embiid. He's great.
Yeah.
Like, he trolls these guys, and it's all playful, and it's all love, and he's freaking hilarious. And I love a good roast anyway. So he gets these guys in it, and, you know, some guys take it personal, some guys don't, but it's...
Too many guys take it personal. Sorry to get on the mic there.
And you're watching...
Too many people take this shit personal.
Probably. But I just think that, you know, those things, like, you're watching those dudes actually face up against each other.
Well, and as you mentioned, I mean, this goes back to, you know, 2-3 years ago when we first started really diving into the NBA, is that it's such, you know, the NFL can be there's faces of franchises, but it's a faceless league.
Yes.
Whereas NBA, you get to see everybody right away. You get to see what, you know, how everyone looks, what they look like in a fucking uniform. No pads. There's none of that stuff.
And so, I also think that the way that the guaranteed contract situation works, you know, they're fully guaranteed, you know, in the NBA, or they're not quite fully guaranteed, but there's a lot of guaranteed money being thrown around. Whereas like in the NFL, there still isn't. So you got these guys holding out for guaranteed money, and some of these other guys that are like tier one type players aren't getting as much guaranteed. It's like, hey man, I'm out here killing myself for a Super Bowl. What are you doing? You're costing the rest of us a chance to be great.
Right.
You know, by doing that, there's a little bit more in terms of like, you know, the less sexy part of it, right? The X's and O's of the collective bargaining agreement also are a situation where like Jimmy Butler's doing this, and it's not really it's affecting the Timberwolves franchise, but it's not. Karl Anthony Towns still got paid. Andrew Wiggins still got paid. Karl Anthony Towns is going to go out and still get 25 and 10 every night, right? It's not going to make him a better or worse defender.
Do you think this helps or hurts his chances of being traded?
Oh, he's getting traded.
But as far as the other team, is this going to help this little outburst? Is that going to help him land on a good team, or is he going to have to settle for somebody because of something?
I think Miami's going to end up making the deal. They're the only team that has assets that would like really interest Minnesota. A good friend of mine made a joke that he said, I would love to see the Timberwolves just hate trade him to like Orlando or Sacramento for like bad contracts just so they could clear money off the books.
Oh, man.
And just be like, enjoy that culture, fuckface.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that's something that absolutely can't be done.
Yeah. So
the hate trade.
Just trade. But, you know, that kind of stuff is interesting. I just think it's, you know, I've never had the opportunity. Like, I would have loved the opportunity to like walk into like a restaurant that I was kind of done working at or like was having like at odds at and just walk onto the line and just start grilling steaks on like a beast mode night and then just be like, you can't run this grill without me. You can't run this. And then just throw the last steak on the plate and just drop the tongs and walk out. I would have loved the opportunity to do that at some point.
You can't do these covers without me.
Oh, my God.
You can't make baked beans without me.
Yeah, so I applaud you, Jimmy Butler. I applaud you.
Holy smokes.
I
missed that all day today.
Another guy that I applaud that I want to get your take on is Drew Brees. He's got the most passing yards in the history of the league for his career.
Yeah.
You know, they really slurped him on Monday night. I don't know if you watched that game or not.
No, I did not watch the game. I caught highlights after. Here's the problem I have. I don't care. Well, let me back up for a second. if Drew Brees, let's just say, for example, he retires this year,
mm-hmm.
and Tom Brady decides to retire this year,
mm-hmm.
everyone's going to forget about Drew Brees because of Tom Brady. He's going to be living in that shadow. He's got the stat. That's great. Love that stat.
He's there with touchdowns too. They're both 500 touchdowns this year.
Yeah.
It's the Super Bowls. That's the difference.
Right. But yeah, Tom Brady's going to take the cake in that comparison. I think, you know, for what Drew Brees has done as far as a vet, I mean, I think it's far more admirable than what Tom Brady's done, in my opinion.
Because he's never got caught cheating.
Well, there's that. But also, too, when
he doesn't have a quack trainer.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have his own line of TB12s.
Right.
Tuberculosis. Tom, right. It's not funny. You should have thought about that. the first time you hear me make that joke?
Yeah. That's really good.
That's gold, Jerry. Yeah. But no, it's you look at it. So, but for just from his career path, right? He had every potential to be a bust.
We're talking about Drew Brees
now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, he got hurt in Miami or in San Diego.
Yeah.
And they gave him like a 20% chance of even ever being able to play again. Do you remember him coming off the field unable to put his arm down?
Right.
His labrum was torn so badly, he held his arm at like a right angle to his side. He couldn't put it all the way down to his side.
Right.
It was bananas.
It's crazy. Yeah. And so you look at that, and someone who has a chance to, when I say bust, meaning just be a you're in and out of the league, which we see more often than not.
But quarterbacks from Big Ten schools, right? He went to Purdue. Quarterbacks from Big Ten schools weren't, you know, there was a lot of smash mouth football, right?
Yeah.
You know, I say that, and, you know, Tom Brady was a Big Ten school guy, you know, in Michigan, but like, you know, he didn't come out like a, you know, he wasn't throwing the ball and lighting the place up. I mean, the point you're making is interesting. You know, he's had chances to be a bust. You know, he got hurt in San Diego and they drafted Phillip Rivers, right? And then they traded him to New Orleans. And then he and Sean Payton were just a match. You could argue that Sean Payton and Drew Brees are Tom Brady and Bill Belichick light in a lot of ways.
Oh, for sure.
Because, you know, you could think of, you know, four or five wide receivers that Tom Brady has had. Like, and part of that is probably bias because they've been in the national spotlight more because of all the Super Bowl appearances.
Right.
But it's, postseason, you know, for sure. It's Randy Moss. It's Wes Welker. It's Julian Edelman. It's Gronkowski. It's, you know.
Aaron Hernandez.
Well, right. But like, you know, like in terms of like super high quality type wide receivers, you know, they had Brandon Cooks last year. They've got guys that, you know, can you name three like tier one NFL wide receivers or NFL receiving guys that Drew Brees has had in his career?
No.
There's three guys. There's Joe Horn. There's Marcus Colston.
Does Joe Horn have the stats to back that up?
Yeah, he's a legit, you know, a legit wide receiver, okay. NFL wide receiver.
Because when you say that, I wanted to say who dat.
Who dat? Remember Joe Horn got the cell phone out from underneath the goalpost?
Yes.
So he's got, Joe Horn, Marcus Colston, Michael Thomas, who he's got now, who's an absolute monster. And he had Jimmy Graham for a couple seasons.
Yeah.
And that's the extent of it. Right? He had Brandon
Cooks
for
quite a while, actually, didn't he?
I think four or five seasons, yeah. You know, he made those guys great. And
he's exciting to watch, period.
There, people will say that Dante Stallworth was, you know, was a legit NFL wide receiver. I think the type of bump and run he was good at usually involved his Rolls Royce and people on the sidewalk.
Ouch.
So maybe let's not throw that guy in there.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and omit that name. We'll pull him out. We're going to pull Hernandez out.
Yeah.
We're good. But I will say,
we don't want to leave Hernandez hanging.
Ooh.
Ah, yikes.
Ooh, oh, did I do that?
Look out below.
Yeah, you know, Brady is efficient quarterback, but he's a robot. Let's not kid ourselves. Brees is exciting to watch. He's as exciting as Russell Wilson when he breaks a play.
Sure.
Breaks open a play. All of a sudden, you're just like, oh, my God, what's going to, you know, it becomes very exciting and very tense really quick. And the fact that he still has the ability to throw deep downfield.
Yeah. The ball that he broke the record on was a dime, dude.
Fucking lights it up, throws it up high, and this thing just screams through the air. That's exciting to watch. And he doesn't have all of the stupid things Phillip Rivers does and says, like nice defense. And when he's checking out, you hear that?
Oh yeah, we're gonna get to the Phillip Rivers reaction to stuff on
Phillip Rivers
on
him
you
and
hate,
17 kids.
You hate him so much. Well, and you got to give Drew Brees credit. You know he's succeeded with even that thing on his face. You know what I mean? Like that's hard. It's hard. You know, and like Drew Brees
at some point though, he's got the money. Why doesn't he get it cut off?
I don't know. It's his trademark. It's his look. It's his thing.
So what is that's a Cindy Crawford look? Come
I
on. Guess.
I don't know, man. I have a ton of love for Drew Brees. That guy went to New Orleans, you know, won them a Super Bowl, was integral in sort of, you know, like reviving the culture of New Orleans
Absolutely.
After the hurricane. Does so much for the community there.
He is what Peyton Manning was for the Colts. Exactly.
That's a great call. I think that's absolutely right.
That's, I mean, he completely energized that team when people didn't think they were going to go anywhere. And count them out. That's where the, you know, who dat came from.
Mm-hmm.
All, you know, especially during Katrina, especially, I mean, all those times. It's one of those things like that. That team became a legitimate contender because of him.
Yeah, he has had a great offense because of how sharp, or he's been able to put up great numbers because of how sharp Sean Payton is, and Sean Payton kept his job because of how close Drew Brees is. Because Sean Payton really could have lost his job after the Bounty Gate stuff in 2012. You know,
think about that. If that happens today.
Oh yeah,
he's gone.
Yeah. Well, that can't happen today because they don't tackle anymore, so it doesn't matter. Listen,
good point.
Listen, I got $50 if you can make eye contact with a quarterback without getting a flag thrown on you. But anyway, triglyceride correspondent, friend of the show, resident
the Brinkster,
resident drunkard, Kevin Brink made a point this week. You know, passing records in this day and age are meaningless, and I kind of playfully lost my mind with him. You know, Drew Brees played at a time when you could still hit quarterbacks and the running game was still important and the numbers were not the same. I think that you could make the argument that passing numbers are going to be meaningless for guys like Pat Mahomes or Carson Wentz or Jimmy Garoppolo or,
Deshaun
Watson.
It's not going to be as nearly as important for sure. And I think part of that is the fantasy culture. Fantasy football is kind of inflated those numbers along with how the officiating and
I think it's mostly the way that the game is legislated now, I think, is what creates that
situation. I think part
of
the legislation has been affected by fantasy football. That's my take.
Well, it's interesting. I think that it's an indirect line that you could draw, but you could definitely draw that line because it's always been about scoring. Every baseball wanted more runs. So guys were taking steroids. Basketball wanted more scoring, so they invented the 3-point line, and then the 24-second shot clock, and then basketball or football wanted more scoring because people were playing fantasy football, and that's how they were
They were financially invested in all the games now.
Yeah. So you could draw that line that those two things are related, but I would also argue that the player safety farce and all those other things, like, it's all. I mean, we've gone into that ad nauseum on this show, but I just don't think that you can discount what a guy like Drew Brees has done. It's not like he's had Randy Moss at his side for his entire career or anything like that. You know, it's Colston for a few years, Joe Horn for a few years.
Well, I think that's probably the most honorable thing is that he hasn't even had one person for that many years. It's been rotating through.
Right.
You know, so we talked Jimmy Graham being the longest one at what, 5 years, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty impressive that you're able to, lift the level of the players around you. Right. We talk about what good players do. Khalil Mack is obviously doing that, has done that in Oakland, is now doing it in Chicago. Tom Brady does do it to a certain extent in New England. There's great players that do that. I think Richard Sherman's another one that's going to do those things for. Yeah, San Francisco.
Once they don't get out of the MASH unit,
right?
Well, and the funniest thing about that point that do suicide is painless. There's words to that song.
I know there is.
The sort of funny irony to the argument that Kevin and I were having was, this day and age, passing records are meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. Well, it's funny that he set the record at a time when his offense and his team is running the ball more than they have at any time in his career. They're running the ball more per game, more attempts per game than they ever have. But in any case, Sports Meets Beer salutes you, Drew Brees. We don't care what our triglyceride correspondent says. He's a good friend of ours. We appreciate his opinions, but this one just happens to be wrong.
Yeah, keep it to yourself.
Oh, boy. Do we have to talk about the local guys? We should.
The
local teams we have to talk about the fucking mess that's NFL in the Bay Area.
Let's do this. Let's take a second, stretch our legs. Let's hear from our sponsor, Advanced Auto Glass and Detail. And we'll go from there.
Okay. Works.
Sports Meets Beer podcast is brought to you by Advanced Auto Glass and Detail. Advanced Auto Glass and Detail is committed to providing you with the highest quality premium glass products and a professional installation by certified technicians. They are experienced in every aspect of glass replacement or repair, offering factory replacement or a premium aftermarket upgrade. They even deal with those annoying windshield rock chips that show up out of nowhere. They offer free local mobile service and offer a full warranty on all workmanship for as long as you own your vehicle. And across the street at Advanced Detail, they specialize in cars, trucks, vans, RVs, boats, show cars, trailers, and more. They are a full-service auto detailing shop, offering exterior wash, polish and wax, interior vacuum, shampoo, trim detail, and even smoke and odor removal. Water spot and scratch removal, paintless dent repair, it's all available at Advanced Auto Glass and Detail. Advanced Auto Glass, look for the purple building at 2460 Santa Rosa Avenue. And right across the street is Advanced Auto Detail at 2549 Santa Rosa Avenue. Advanced Auto Glass, 707-526-5700. Advanced Auto Detail, 707-526-2200. Let Advanced Auto Glass and Detail take care of all of your automotive needs.
Well, Bay Area football just sucks.
Sucks.
I cannot remember a time when I couldn't watch either game. I literally elected to go to work on Sunday.
2014. That was the last time that this was
both
like,
team were like this.
Both teams were like this, yeah. It was the last Dennis Allen year. Last Dennis Allen year.
Last time I went to London, too.
Yeah, last Dennis Allen year and like the last. That was the Jimmy
too.
Garoppolo year. Or not Jimmy Garoppolo, Jim Tom Sewell year. That was 15, actually. I take that back. That was 15. Man. Yeah, with the 49ers, with both teams, I said this on our football segment that we do on Danny Wright Morning Show, 97.7 The River, classic rock for the North Bay. Check us out every Friday on that show. But, I said this is kind of a renaissance for scheme and play calling in the Bay Area. It's kind of an exciting time. You have players running open down the field on both sides of the Bay. You can see where the offensive scheme is working. And you can see where the defensive scheme for the Niners anyway, you can see where that's working also. The guys are just getting physically beaten because they're running like the third and fourth string defensive players out in a lot of places.
Yeah, you guys are worn.
It's crazy right now. It's crazy. But still, it doesn't, just because the scheme is right doesn't mean that they're playing well. So like, I don't know that you can give a ton of grief to the coaching staff in San Francisco right now until they get everybody healthy. You might be able to give a ton of grief to the training staff.
Yeah.
But not to the coaching staff.
Health and conditioning, you're out.
They've cleaned up the tackling a little bit. They're not committing quite as many penalties, but I don't, the frustrating thing for the Niners, from a viewer standpoint, and I'm an X's and O's junkie, right? I've watched that game three times because I'm an idiot. But, defensively, Josh Rosen didn't do anything to them, really. He threw a 75-yard touchdown pass to open the game and then threw for 170 yards for the game. And they lost. The defense played well. And David Johnson's a good to great player. Has the second or third highest touchdown total over the last four seasons, and he missed one of those seasons because of a broken arm. So he's a great player, and they stopped him, generally speaking. But they turned the ball over five times.
Right. That's Beathard, great. That's obscene.
CJ Beathard can't count to five. Because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, throw it. He just doesn't do that. He's taking sacks at terrible times. He's letting guys, I don't care who you are. The 49er offensive line, they all tried to play, but they're all hurt. And so they, Arizona actually has some speed on the outside defensively, and they just got around the tackles, and they just created issues for Beathard. He just couldn't get rid of the ball. And then that whole offense was predicated on speed. Right? McKinnon's a speedster. Breed is a speedster. Goodwin's a speedster. Pettis is a speedster. These are guys that have real speed. You've got hands guys on that offense, and you got Garoppolo who can deliver the ball with accuracy. Before the season started, you lose McKinnon. You have Breida who can step in, but instead of going McKinnon and Breida in your backfield, now you're Breida and Alfred Morris. It's not the same system. So you take some of the speed out of that. And then, we're in week five, and we've also lost Pettis and Goodwin and Breida now. So all of the speed, and Garoppolo. So all the speed is out of the offense, and it's not the same. So I'll be interested to see how it plays out for the Niners moving forward, what they do schematically, if this renaissance of scheme, like if they're able to be flexible and make some changes to make that offense. Because that Arizona game is a game they should have won. you know, even despite four turnovers, they had a chance down the stretch. They got within 2 points late, and they couldn't close. And then two more turnovers, and that was all she wrote. And so, you know, they got to clean that kind of stuff up. They don't have a ton of winnable games left. You know, we kind of were laughing about it in a little text group, but they already flexed Niners-Rams at a Sunday night coming up at the end of the month.
God.
And, you know, it's Packers-Niners coming up on Monday night this week. It's going to be a dud. I can't wait to hear Jason Witten try and, you know, sex that game up. That'll be awesome. If you're a Raider fan, though, the renaissance of scheme has started to have some holes in that ship.
Oh, yeah.
Primarily, can my boy Marshawn get the ball on the one?
Give him the fucking ball.
On the 1 yard line. First and goal. I don't care. Run it up there 3 times. What about his running style tells you that he can be tackled in a 1 yard situation right now? He can't.
It's obscene. It's obscene. They've done this 3 times out of the last 5 games where they have a chance to make a game changing play and they elect to not hand it to him.
I would argue, I think it's definitely two fourth and shorts, right? And one type plays. And then I think there's been more than one. It might not have been first and goal, but I think there have been more opportunities to get him the ball in the goal line situation.
Oh,
they haven't done it. That's crazy.
So, you know, what we talked about before we click the record button here is when you have a runner or a running back with that running style, why are you not featuring him? I mean, let me paint a picture back in the 2000s here. Of a gentleman named Zach Crockett. I mentioned it before.
Yeah.
Guess what? Goal line stance. Hey, let's get Crockett in here. Here's Zach Crockett. Big fucking back.
Yeah.
Huge shoulder pads. Takes the ball, runs it in.
Yeah.
He did it. That was the makeup. That was the three-headed monster.
Yeah, he was the touchdown vulture, as they say
for sure.
In fantasy football.
So why they're not utilizing the Marshawn that way is absolutely maddening to me.
Well, and we watched that game against the Browns, and the offense did so many good things in that game. You know, they racked up 45 points. You know, Derek Carr threw for 400 yards. They got Jordy Nelson going. They got, you know, Jared Cook had a good game. You know, Amari Cooper got off in that game. You know, Marshawn was running. I mean, the offense did whatever they wanted, essentially. And
just to give you a quick update, Zach Crockett. 510 rushes for 1,700 yards, 36 touchdowns.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
So, granted, you have a much more versatile runner with Lynch, much more violent runner with Lynch.
Yeah.
It's beyond ridiculous why they're not feeding him the rock at that point.
Yeah. And, the numbers look good for Derek Carr. He's delivering the ball. He's throwing some strikes. He still looks like he's playing scared. That's the thing that makes me scratch my head.
Well, and I'll jump in real quick too. The other part that's freaking me out is that he was at least out of the pocket and mobile a few times, right?
Yes.
But there was an opportunity for him to get a first down. He was running with the ball. This is like third quarter. Running up, he had about 2 yards to go. And in comes linebacker from San Diego. I don't know who it was. I forget.
Mm-hmm.
He could have put his shoulder down and get across and get the first down. He slid right before. They ended up going fourth down. They punt the ball. It's over. I watched the Texans game later that night and watched Deshaun Watson just get the snot knocked out of him.
Yeah.
But he's going. I mean, he's granted, I'm not advocating that style of play for a quarterback, but at least he's taking the chance. Derek Carr is still playing scared. He's still playing. I don't think he's playing hurt. I just think he's scared. He doesn't want to get hit like he did before. He feels it's all on his shoulders, and I just feel he is not the quarterback he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, there's a level of I think they call it don't give a shit, right? That you have to have. No, we're getting the, you know, CJ Beathard has too much of it. Stop taking so many hits. Get rid of the ball, jackass.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's got too much of it. And you could argue that Garoppolo had too much of it too, right? But it's not like he took a hit and got hurt. He was trying to cut the ball upfield, and he hurt his ACL. You know, Derek Carr, there was a time when he didn't give a shit either. He would run for the extra yards. He would do this. And you know, he had the moxie to have big comebacks in these games. It just doesn't – he did it against Cleveland, which was, you know, which was exciting and rewarding and you know, felt good. It felt like maybe he was turning some level of a corner, like maybe that'll bring some of the magic back. There just wasn't any. You know, and it's not like they got absolutely dominated in that game. They just didn't really show up. It's not like the Chargers were so physically better than them.
No, there was absolutely zero intensity in the game.
The thing that
the thing is, for them, that would have been looked at the opportunity to have, we need to play out, this game means everything. We're playing on the road. This is essentially a home game for us.
Yeah. This is the game that you make up for being in London for, right? Like, you don't, right. You're losing a home game because of that, right? But you have this game, which is kind of a home game. So, you know, like, yeah, you're right. This is a game you have to have. You have to. You could still make a little bit of noise in the division, right?
Right.
The thing that made my heart hurt the most in that game was the late touchdown to Jordy Nelson, where they had like five dudes still moving.
Yes.
And they didn't call a penalty. And Phillip Rivers is throwing, you know, a classic Phillip Rivers fit. And the referee looks at him and like literally points at the scoreboard and goes, it's 26-10, man. Like, look at the score, Phil.
Yeah.
Like, look at the score. And I thought, you know, Phil Rivers, just knock it off. And then I thought, he's actually kind of right. And did the referee just say, look at the scoreboard? Like, we're just going to let him have this one? Oh, like that. Everything about that exchange has made my heart hurt. Oh, it's like, God.
That's what we're reduced to?
That's where we're at right now?
That's how, you know, NFL teams, I mean, Jesus, I'll tell you right now, thank God the Niners are sucking so bad as well. Barring injury, this is all injury related.
Yeah, of course, saying, but even still.
The record is the record. Otherwise, I would probably have to log out of every single social media from all all the haters that want to fucking run it up my ass about the Raiders. So that's the only thing. That's like one of the only shining spots in this whole thing.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, we want to get into like the X's and O's side of it. Even when they were healthy, the Niners weren't tackling particularly well. They couldn't get off the field on third down. The right. offense had, I mean, they played against Minnesota, but we now know that Minnesota's defense is not what we thought it was going to be.
No.
So we thought after week one, we're like, well, they played pretty well against they moved the ball pretty well against a great Minnesota, you know, defense. Now I'm thinking, man, they didn't move the ball that well against this terrible Minnesota defense.
Nice. Oh, well, we can agree that both the brands, the Niners and the Raiders are just fucking horrible. So. Not much else to look forward to, but let's do this. Switch.
Drink until we pass out.
We could.
Okay.
I'll fall on the laptop until the recorder stops.
Okay, great.
Let's switch gears.
Okay.
Let's change topics.
Okay.
What do you want to talk about? Beer or meat?
Let's talk about
beer. Perfect.
Beer. Yeah.
We're talking about beer. We're not drinking beer in this one right now.
Right.
So, yeah.
Lot has happened in the beer industry. We saw exponential growth for, what, 10 years in the business? 8 years in the business?
Solid 8 years.
Where breweries were growing by 10%, 15%, 20%, 30% in growth because of the craft beer nation took off.
If you're wondering why there's a brewery on every corner in your hometown.
Yeah, breweries are Starbucks now.
It's because of what happened, what started 8 years ago.
And we saw it happen with New Belgium. We saw it happen with Stone. And it just happened in our own backyard here where a major brewery had to let members of its workforce go. And it's kind of it's been a huge story here in the Sonoma County because Lagunitas just got all this money and they just, you know, how could they do that? What are they doing? It's just, you know, what, you know, obviously, you know, Ben's position with the company precludes for a lot of discussion on this, but I do think it's worth noting that it speaks to the temperature of the beer industry right now. You know, you hear people say the craft beer industry is growing so quickly, but the reality is that it's the number of brewers is growing quickly. The size of the pie is staying the same or shrinking, right. And there just have to be more slices out of it.
Well, this is the age old conversation that I'd have with a retailer back when I worked for the distributor, and I'd walk in and they'd say, you know, at the time we were the only distributor doing these long draw glycol installs, or we had a fully functioning staff of installation, but you know, we had the crew to do it. You walk in this place that has, you know, like 8 beers on tap or 6 beers on tap, and they say, I want to add I want to add 30 beers on tap, or I want 50 beers on tap, right? You get these, and then you show them the quote, and 9 times out of 10, they can't afford it. They don't want to afford it. But then the question I'd ask is, okay, well, what are you going to do to bring in more customers? Because if you have the same numbers and you're doing well with those numbers, you're just diluting them by spreading mm-hmm. this out over 50 handles.
Mm-hmm.
And they would look at me with these perplexed. They would, no, we need the variety. And I said, I understand the variety. You can accomplish that with 2 more handles or 1 more handle or a rotating seasonal program or whatever. You can accomplish it in a couple different ways to get the variety that you're looking for. But why would you then go to 50 to tie up all that money in keg deposits and the initial investment of the draft system that will take you 2 to 3 years to pay off based upon your current volume? Like, I'd go through the whole thing with them, not try to talk them out of it, but just help understand, like, where's the more business going to come from? You don't just put 50 handles in and all of a sudden people start showing up. And that's the same thing with some of these breweries in the beer. The line I'm making mm-hmm. is that just because you can brew
line,
beer,
by the way, I see where it's going. This is a great analogy.
Well, just because you can brew more beer doesn't mean there's more people consuming.
Right.
You know, especially, you know, California saw this coming. The smarter people saw this coming last year with the legalization of marijuana. We knew that all spirits and alcohol would take a hit
mm-hmm.
with that. Spirits has been strong. Everything that the craft beer industry did 6 years ago and 7 years ago is what the spirits companies are doing now. They're offering innovation. They're offering more diverse flavors and more unique flavors. And now it's become a thing that now there's more just, and their price hasn't gone up as much as craft beer has. That's probably the biggest, to me, it's the biggest driver personally.
Well, let's stop right there. Let's break that down for just a quick second. You know, I just had a great conversation with one of our liquor distributors the other day about, you know, we've noticed in Sonoma County that there are a lot more sort of craft distillers also popping up.
Yes.
Alley Six, Lost Republic, Sonoma Brothers, the Spirit
there's
Works.
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
There's a dozen in less, probably about a year's time.
And so I asked him, I said, you know, have you guys noticed a little drop off in some of the bigger brands? You know, the Kettles, the Tanqueray's, the Maker's Marks. Have you noticed a drop off in any of that, even an incremental drop off in any of those things with the pop up of all these local? Because the line I was sort of drawing was, you know, we're going to get, as this conversation goes on, we'll kind of get back to it. But, you know, people now, they'll drink the IPA from down the street before they drink the IPA from South Carolina in California, right? Or from San Diego, even. They'll drink the IPA from down the corner at such and such brewery. You know, I'm going to drink the local stuff that I know that is fresh, that I know the guy who's brewing it before I drink the one from Texas. I'll try it, but my go-to is going to be the guy locally, right?
Right.
Generally speaking, you know, and so I said, you know, are you seeing that kind of take hold in the spirits industry in the area? And he said no, because the small local, you know, distiller doesn't have serious ad space in Maxim magazine, or doesn't have serious ad space, you know, during NBA games, or
it's not even that. It doesn't have the floor space of your major grocery store.
Well, yeah. So it's all part of that same stuff too. But like, you know, to draw the point, I mean, Lagunitas has much more floor space than say like Barrel Brothers does. Right.
Absolutely.
And Lagunitas is much bigger than Barrel Brothers, but like, you know, but you could say that like, you know, Barrel Brothers is having more success against a Sierra Nevada than say like Sonoma Brothers is having against Kettle One,
for sure.
You know, and that's obviously there's a global aspect to all of those things. But you know, we're splitting hairs at that point. Basically, what I was getting at is that, you know, with craft beer, you know, we could distill a bottle of vodka and it can sit on the shelf for 5 years and not really lose any of its. Only the packaging gets old, right?
Yeah, all of a sudden it's always Christmas.
Yeah, the liquid stays the same. When you're drinking fresh beer, fresh hop IPAs, you know, big, bold IPAs and these really hop forward beers, the shelf life isn't the same. Your need to turn them over is a lot faster, right? Your need, like, you have probably more waste. You're pulling out of date. There's no out of code gins.
No.
Right?
No.
There's, you know, there's none of that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot more pressure on breweries to do those types of things. And so they need to stay fresh and innovative, I would argue, even more so than like a liquor distributor or like a liquor company does. And so, there's just the reason why I bring that up is just because I'm always blown away by the amount of pressure on the beer industry to stay new and exciting and keep the inventory flowing, as compared to, say, whiskeys and whatnot. And people who drink spirits drink what their parents drink, right? Oh, my dad was a Jack Daniels guy. Exactly. You can't necessarily say that about craft beer. You say about macros, but you can't really say that about,
for sure.
Our kids will say, well, my dad was a Lagunitas drinker. My dad was our kids will never say we were Sierra Nevada drinkers, but generally speaking, my dad was a Ballast Point drinker, whatever, so that's what I'll drink too. Or my dad was we say, oh, my dad drank Coors Originals.
Yeah.
We say that about macros.
My dad was a Bud Heavy guy.
Yeah. Our kids will talk about craft beers in that same regard.
Yeah. The tangled web. I mean, there's, like I said, if you pull out I had this conversation with a coworker the other day, and we were at a grocery store and we found an ad that fell behind the cooler from 10 years ago.
That's awesome.
Okay. So you're talking about a craft, at that point, a craft, six pack of beer.
Yeah.
Was, was $5.99, $6.99 for high end.
Mm hmm.
Now we've got a 13 and $14.99 six pack. Thanks a lot, Ballast Point.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
And then as you look at a bottle of Jack Daniels is $28 bucks. Then guess what? That bottle of Jack Daniels, $30 bucks now.
Yeah.
There hasn't been the price increase that liquor has faced as much as beer has, which is a big problem.
Right.
So I'm speaking back directly to these layoffs. Not Lagunitas specific, because I'm also going to mention, so that you mentioned, there was about 30 people from New Belgium. They got, laid off last year. Another 60 or so from Stone.
And what is Miller Coors going through right now?
Well, I'm getting to that. The Stone was interesting, though, because the Stone picked out the longest tenured employees, which was clearly a salary move.
Salary cap move, right? Absolutely.
That's a little, it's none of these are easy to swallow. Let's be very clear. You're talking about people losing their jobs and their livelihoods and things like that. It's never easy.
Mm.
Then you go through Constellation Brands, which is Grupo Modelo. So it's, this is all Corona Modelo, who now own Ballast Point. They cut through about 200-ish people earlier this year. And that was everything from the craft segment. So you didn't get Corona guys cut or Modelo guys cut because that brand is still growing.
Murdering. I know.
Modelo is the new Corona. Guess what? Corona's not suffering at all. I mean, it's a little bit, but not suffering at all. They have innovation at the right time. Anyways, so then you have that. They cut all their craft guys out, but they already have for Ballast Point, the hard work's done. They're already in most chain stores.
Yeah.
They have to maintain that distribution, which they do because now all of the distributorships are aligned. That happened last year. And then you get into the Miller Coors thing, which is still going on as of Monday this week. So we're talking a few days ago. They were calling people announcing if they got laid off or not. People I knew in the organization have been saved or made it through. They were offering an early retirement option.
Yes.
They were seeing who was going to jump through first.
Which is a thing big companies will do.
Absolutely.
Give people a relative golden parachute.
Hey, look, man, yeah, here you go. Here's a chance to get out on this note, and maybe it's worth more than what it would be if you decide to leave later. That people on the edge of that 3-year mark or 5-year mark, what it makes financial sense. Then you go through and, logging into the 12% people they cut was roughly a little over 100 people.
12% is a lot.
It's a lot. It's huge.
A lot.
Take 12% out of your paycheck. It's a lot. That's a lot. It's a lot of money.
What's 12% of 10?
A lot.
Yeah. It's just these companies, they get a ton of flack when they start laying people off, right? Because, we've stumped for big beer on this podcast before. We've said, hey, look at what the Miller Coors are doing. Look what the Lagunitas or the Ballast Points or the Anheuser's even, look like what they're doing. Your favorite brewery is owned by big beer, right? We said that 100 times on this show. And the reality is the beer culture has always sort of been this counterculture, and it's supposed to be cool and everybody's helping each other out and whatnot. And as these acquisitions
we've also romanticized them tremendously.
And the average beer drinker does that. When you say we, how many people on Facebook do we see, or how many people do we interact with that gave Lagunitas a ration of shit because they quote sold out to Heineken,
right?
They still do Skunk Train. They still do Beer Circus. They still do the Brown Sugar and The Born Yesterday just came out, which we're going to sample here in a minute. You know, The Born Yesterday came out this past weekend. They still do all the things that they've always done. The right. pricing has stayed, you know, relatively the same in terms of its, you know, place in the market.
Until, yeah, it's in alignment with everybody else.
Yeah, and so, you know, they haven't done anything from like a beer drinker's perspective to really change the culture of the beer, the flavor, the caliber of the beer. You know, the same thing with the New Belgiums, the Ballast Points even. It's just, Ballast Point was expensive before oh, Constellation took
yeah,
it over.
Yeah, the Constellation bio did not increase the price. That's just, that was the sticker price.
So a lot of that stuff, you know, oh, the well, price
that's,
of,
so
price
let, me, of, let me draw a quick line. The sticker price of New Belgium dictated the price that they sold it at, right? They saw the rampant growth. They were, mm-hmm. they were up, you know, 200% in growth. They were just everywhere. Sculpin was everywhere. And the innovations and the iterations of Sculpin were showing all the growth. They were leading the charge.
Yeah.
So Constellation saw that and gave them a huge valuation.
Right. right.
This is like a Shark Tank moment. They mm-hmm. looked at them and said, okay, this is the projection. This is what you're at. This is what you've been doing. Look at all the trends of everyone behind us. Be the leader. So that's when Constellation coughed up $1 billion for that brand.
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about it on this show. We scratched our head and tried to come up with somewhat reasoning and logistics as why. Those same measures is what got New Belgium in trouble with their people, Stone, and now Lagunitas. It's a simple, you know, it's not a big beer issue as much as it's a not being able to keep the same growth line.
So it's think about it, you know, think about the Allen Iverson story, right? Just circling back to sports. Allen Iverson got his first contract was enormous. The guy would go out and he would never wear a suit twice, right? Just
right.
bought brand new clothes every time he had to travel, you know, and he had this many cars and this much, and he retired with nothing, right? You give somebody a huge amount of money right out the gate, they're not always going to immediately apply it properly. So companies like Ballast Point, for example, or even Lagunitas got $500 million in their pocket in a calendar year, and we're looking at half a or 10% growth, 15, 20% growth over the course of a number of years. What choice do you have as a business but to prepare for that continued level of growth?
Right.
Right. The mistake is, shouldn't we just stretch our own current assets out as far as we possibly can before we start adding people to account for the growth? The mistake that gets made by, this is not a Lagunitas problem. This is a business problem. Businesses do this in every capacity all the time.
I don't care if you are a, you know, you own a chain of, you know, pizza parlors or muffler shops or yogurt times. I don't care what yeah. your business of choice is. You know, the labor cost, and in California, is great, oh. especially with insurance. Right?
Great, maybe not isn't the word some of us would use.
Yes.
You know, out of control, perhaps. but I'm glad you draw the line to like small businesses too. The analogy that I would make is when we open a restaurant, we run with three times the staff that we think we'll need because we need to be prepared to overserve the guest in the beginning to make a good impression.
Right.
And you're also going to be the busiest that you'll ever be. And then you start cutting back from there. Right. So a brewery gets $500 million and they say, or whatever the, you know, whatever their investment is, or their new investment or their new acquisition, whatever money they get, their new seed money, they get this huge amount of money and they go, okay, well, we've seen this amount of growth. We're going to need to account for that. And this new investment wants to see an increase in that growth.
Right.
So we need to account for those things. Well, the growth either isn't there or they didn't need this many people to, you know, to cover the growth that they ended up getting, that they forecasted properly, or whatever it is. So then you have to cut back from there. It's a horrible, terrible part of being a business owner on any level, whether you hire four people to run your yogurt time and you end up having to cut two,
right?
Or you have an entirely new European division to sell your, you know, compression shorts that you're manufacturing now,
yeah,
or whatever, and then now all of a sudden you don't need all those people, so you laugh and they go, it's a tough part of it.
It is. Know? It's a, you know, but it's the thing is, it's business, and this happens, you know, happens all the time. It doesn't make my comrades' jobs any less important. I feel
of
really horrible
not.
For them.
Of course not. No, I just don't, the point know. I want to make, Ben, is just that I don't know that people are looking at this, and what we're hearing is Lagunitas got a ton of shit for selling out to Heineken,
right,
when all they did was make the decision any man would make. Oh, you're going to give me $500 million for this? Yeah. Whatever this thing is, you can have it for $500 million.
Well, and that's, you know, the part two is that there were so many people touched by that that had a halo effect from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even talking about like getting, you know, creating new jobs. I mean, just the people that were involved in that brewery from the start, the blood, sweat, and tears. This isn't like, you know, remember when, you know, when Google went public, you know, and the receptionists are driving Lamborghinis and
right.
shit like that. It's not like that. But at the same time, like, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of relationships made, both personally and financially, that benefited from that transaction. So, yeah, any person having something that gets valued and you go out, you look at that and go, man, look what I could do for my family, but also my family's families and my work family's families, right? And so anyone would do that.
Right.
The person who doesn't do it is a fool.
I met with somebody recently that works for Seismic Brewing Company. Actually, I've been trying to get him scheduled to come on the podcast. He wants to get more members of the brewery in, but I've known Tom for a really long time. And he made a point in a completely separate conversation saying that, you know, breweries, generally speaking, are perpetually broke, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you're constantly having to buy new equipment, upgrade this. You're having to buy ingredients, pay the labor, whatever. You don't ever really get super ahead, right? So it's hard for the average person to see an acquisition take place, you know? And, Lagunitas is the most recent one, but we can use Ballast Point as an example or whomever, you know, Stone with all their acquisition, you know, their growth. But it's hard to see these guys take, you know, this big money investment, you know, and then turn around, you know, to be the average beer drinker, to turn around within, what, 2 years, 3 years, and now all of a sudden we're letting 100 people go in the local area. The reality is that all that money went into, like, hey, we're building this brewery in Chicago and Azusa, and,
right.
you know, we're trying to get into these markets, and all of that stuff costs money. That's where all of this money went to. It's not like we took the $500 million and then just started hacking jobs off, which is the way a lot of people are approaching this publicly right now.
Right.
And I understand it's a lot of money, and it's more money than we could count. And so it's hard for us to fathom. It's why people don't think, you know, that's why they give professional athletes a hard time for the way they act. You know, he's making that much money, he can't make a free throw. Man, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the same thing. It's like there's so much that goes into these types of things, and it's a business decision that sucks. A lot of people lose their jobs when this kind of stuff happens, whether you're Lagunitas or you're, you know, Agilent or now Keysight or, you know, whomever.
Right.
Because Lagunitas is...
You're Subaru, you're this. I mean, it happens everywhere.
Yeah, in terms of employers in Sonoma County, they've got to be one of the top 10 employers in terms of numbers, right?
I don't think so. That's a good one. I have to look that one up.
So it's a big story here in Sonoma County, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the business is failing or it's in trouble or that it's the devil for ultimately letting people go. They just made horribly tough decisions.
Right.
And so in any case, the beer, there is great beer out there, guys.
So anyways, yeah, episode 79. Let's wrap this thing up. Check out episode 80.
Yeah.
That's going to be some beer tasting.
81's probably going to have some talking in it, so you can check that out when it comes out.
For sure. There'll be some talking in both. We're pretty...
I would imagine so, yeah.
In the meantime, yeah, check out some previous episodes if you can.
What if we just released like a 10-minute episode of us just sipping beer? All it was just gulping noise, like sipping noises, like breaths out. Yeah, just 15 minutes, just like Nick Offerman in front of the fireplace for the holidays. Just the same idea, but just us just drinking beer for 15 minutes.
The only way I would agree to it is if we can get Paul Flart, the malt guy. Oh, man. Let's wrap this thing up, man.
Nighty-night.